Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer, and this is Double Coverage. We're talking all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. Lots to talk about this program. Baseball season, surprisingly and abruptly at an end for Ole Miss. We'll talk about the Rebels' 0-2 performance in their regional and some other topics as well. Baseball season is not over for Mississippi State. Logan, you making those reservations for Omaha, are you?
Well, I'm looking into it. I think it's a little late for reservations. I mean, you know how people do that, Barrett. They book that stuff up, and I think my best bet now is just to wait, and hopefully some of the people that get eliminated this weekend, some of those rooms open up. And, of course, there's, you know, Mississippi State's taking on a very talented Arizona team that, you know, could obviously make their run to Omaha as well. So it's definitely, things aren't locked up for Mississippi State by any means. But, you know, you try to plan ahead. So, you know, we've been asked to, you know, look at our budget and make sure we have all that in order, you know, just for a potential chance to go to Omaha. So, you know, I went 3 years ago, you went 2 years ago. So we've, you know, had some recent familiarity with how much things are going to cost. And, you know, if you've been up to Omaha, you realize that nothing is cheap, especially during those 2 weeks.
That's absolutely true. And when it looked like there was the possibility, I think remote, because Ole Miss won its regional, I'm not sure it would have come away from a Miami Super Regional having won down there. But, you know, you plan for the possibility of two teams in Omaha when you have two teams hosting regionals. And as we were doing that, Logan, part of the discussion with John Pitts, our sports editor, included you, me, and Thomas Wells in an RV, man. Were you in favor of that?
No, not at all. I stayed in Omaha 3 years ago with two other guys in a hotel room for 13 days, and that hotel room got small. So I could only imagine two other men in an RV how small that thing would get. So I was not in favor of that idea whatsoever.
You know, I think the only way the RV thing works is if you take your outdoor canopy and you take an outdoor fan and your lawn chairs and then you just basically expand your space a little bit and I guess go into the RV when it's brutally hot. But you know, it is so expensive, you know, a trip to the College World Series, and so that was something that I know John was batting around a little bit. Hey, folks, before we move on, let's tell you about some other Daily Journal productions you need to be aware of. Be sure to look for our news podcast, The Memo, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And be sure to look for Gene Phelps and Brad Locke every Wednesday for Prep Rally, everything high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. And we're back with you on Thursday or Friday or just whenever we can get together as schedules allow. Schedules being what they are right now, I'm actually down in Denham Springs with the Ole Miss season behind me, so to speak, and kind of taking care of some visiting and doing some things down here. Logan, I know you're getting ready for that Super Regional against Arizona. We're going to talk about that in a little bit as well. Before we get there, Logan, wanted to talk a little bit about the Jim Harbaugh camp. And, of course, that's not the official title of it, but it sure seemed like that, with Harbaugh, the Michigan coach, being such a lightning rod in the satellite camp discussion. And when the NCAA flip-flopped in late April and went ahead and approved these types of camps, well, the camp that was already scheduled for Wednesday at Pearl High School was on go again. And that meant that Jim Harbaugh would make a stop in Mississippi for one of his 25 camps in 15 states. And that did take place on Wednesday at Pearl High School, and I was there to cover that for the Daily Journal. You know, we've heard these SEC coaches, Logan, talk about satellite camps when the SEC was still trying to figure out where it stood on these things. Jim Harbaugh was already kind of pushing ahead, you know, had already done this for a couple of years. And, you know, so the SEC took a stance, and then finally the NCAA said, we're not going to do this, and then we are. Well, you know, long story short, everybody's doing it now. Everybody's on board. But the Harbaugh thing was already on the books, and it was an interesting day at Pearl High School. You know, we talked to Harbaugh a little bit. He came and spoke with reporters for about 5 or 6 minutes. Dan Mullen, the Mississippi State coach, said he could not speak with us because that was an NCAA rule. You know, it's kind of a gray area there because I think he knew that we weren't going to ask him about recruits per se, but that we would ask him about the satellite camp issue in the national conversation that's been. Hugh Freeze was not at this camp. He was playing in the Pro-Am event at the FedEx St. Jude Golf Tournament. Both of these guys, Freeze and Mullen, had staff there, so the schools were well represented. And lots of schools at this event on Wednesday, just to name a few, Jackson State and Alcorn, Arkansas State, Louisiana Lafayette, you know, many more. So lots of schools there and lots of kids. And the message that Jim Harbaugh tried to convey to us, and he did, number one, it was a kinder and gentler Harbaugh. You know, you've seen some of the combative comments on Twitter or things like that. He doesn't seem to be a guy who minds stirring the pot very much, Jim Harbaugh. But he wasn't like that in talking with some Mississippi media at Pearl. And really, the message coming from him was that this is not about signing kids for the University of Michigan. Okay, that's what he says. These camps, it's not about signing kids to Michigan. It's about creating opportunities for high school football players to be seen, creating opportunities for these guys to be before college coaches. And as he points out, there are more scholarship opportunities in football than in any other sport. And then you throw in the other levels of football and junior college football and things like that. All these scholarships out here. And Harbaugh says that these camps are about just exposure for the kids. So you can debate that, and we'll throw that out there. But that was the message at Pearl on Wednesday. And I think we all know that while there are some opportunities for the kids to get before coaches, and that's a good thing, you know what, if Jim Harbaugh can convince a 4 or 5-star kid from Mississippi to make his way up to Michigan, then I think he would consider it well worth the investment of time and money for he and his staff. I don't know that that's going to happen because of a camp at Pearl or any other camp in the South, but he certainly is putting in the work to get his program out in front. And it was a good day at Pearl on Wednesday. It was a hot day. And Harbaugh was there dressed in a Saints Archie Manning jersey, throwback jersey there. It was black. He had on black sleeves underneath. He had on his Navy Michigan cap. So I'm thinking he was, you know, it's like he was dressed for the Michigan winter. But and, it was a hot day. He had on all that. And he had on long khakis, too.
Yeah, and had the jersey tucked into the khakis. That's a Harbaugh trademark, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've seen him a lot, but you know, I agree with kind of, you know, with his message, at least the message he portrayed to you guys in the media. And that's why SEC coaches aren't necessarily on board with these satellite camps. Number one, it provides extra work for them. I mean, these guys are, you know, just working nonstop year round. They don't get to spend a whole lot of time with their families. And the summertime is really the only opportunity that many of these guys get to spend with their families, and these satellite camps are taken away from that. And number two, you know, if you're an SEC caliber player, you're not, you know, flying under the radar. I mean, you're going to be seen, whether it's on Huddle or Scout or Rivals or 24/7. Somebody out there is going to find you. Now, but I do think that these satellite camps definitely benefit a lot of those schools that you mentioned, Parrish, you know, the Alcorn States, the Jackson States, Arkansas State, Louisiana Lafayette. It really gives an opportunity to some of those middle tier players, you know, to get out there and impress some coaches. And I think it could benefit that way. But at the same time, you know, Jim Harbaugh is not all about just helping those kids. I mean, he's definitely out there for some beneficial reasons. I mean, or else he wouldn't be convincing his school, you know, to spend that kind of money to set these camps up all around the United States. But at the same time, you know, if it helps some kids get some scholarships that may necessarily wouldn't have gotten those looks, then, hey, it benefits the kids. But I do see the SEC coach's point of view that it's not going to benefit them at all. And at the same time, you know, they'd love to be spending this type of time with their families as opposed to, you know, out recruiting, you know, once again.
I understand that. I didn't see the Indian Warhawks there in Pearl, Logan. I was kind of looking for the alma mater there, Louisiana Monroe. Didn't see those guys. I know they've been at an LSU camp in Shreveport and been at one down in New Orleans. So I know they've been on the road with these things as well. And
I doubt
you know
my
what?
Alma mater was there either.
Are they going to add football?
No, they're not going to add football. But the Mississippi University for Women has hired an athletic director. So sports are coming back to the W, and I'm excited.
Well, that is good. Hey, I know you're right about the opportunities provided for second-tier players, and I think that's a good thing. So you can debate Jim Harbaugh's intentions, but the bottom line is, as you say, if you are an SEC or Big Ten level player, you're going to be found with or without a satellite camp. I do like the opportunities provided for smaller colleges and players who aren't Power Five conference level athletes. I spoke with a high school coach, an assistant coach, Gene Harmon from Moss Point. He was somebody that I kind of ran into as his guys were getting registered and checking in. And I said, let's talk a little bit about you know, the high school perspective for these camps. You know, we approach this all the time in the media from the college perspective and, you know, and what it means to these SEC coaches. But the high school coaches, man, they love them. And of course, when the, you know, when the NCAA was not going to allow them, that was a big disappointment. Now, Coach Harmon told me that the Moss Point strategy is they identify about 10 of these camps, you know, and they encourage their kids to pick out, you know, two or three that they can get to. And then the Moss Point coaches help them get there, whether that's driving the bus as it was to Pearl or whatnot. But these satellite camps, the kids can get to a one-day camp for usually about $25 as opposed to, you know, a 3 or 4 day camp that includes a cost for overnight stays and meals. And, you know, all of a sudden you get up into a price range that not all of these high school players can afford, but most of them can get up the money to get to, you know, one or more satellite camps. And that's kind of the strategy that they're using at Moss Point. And I'm sure many other high schools as well that, you know, look, let's take advantage of these camps. Let's get there. Let's help the kids get there. Harmon was telling me about a camp at Gulf Coast last week that Moss Point and a lot of other schools attended. He said there were 13 colleges there with, he estimated, about 700 players. So it is a great opportunity for high school players. And whether you like the satellite camps or not, whether you think if you're a college football coach and you think you ought to be home relaxing a little bit when you really don't get a chance to do that the rest of the year, hey, these satellite camps are here to stay. They have taken hold. Everybody's on board. Everybody is developing a plan, and they are not going to go away anytime soon. Let's shift gears a little bit, Logan. Talk to us about the Starkville Super Regional. We'll come back and talk some Ole Miss baseball as well, but what can the Bulldogs expect from Arizona? I know one of the things they were expecting was a rematch with Louisiana Lafayette, but Arizona wins a road regional to advance to the Supers in Starkville.
Yeah, and they won three games in a span of 27 hours. And, you know, in today's college baseball, that's a remarkable thing to do. I mean, you see that all the time. You know, you see it in, you know, summer ball and some things like that. But at the college level, you just don't see that. And in fact, they played four games in a span of 2 days and three in a span of 27 hours. So, yeah, and I know a lot of things went crazy in some of those Louisiana regionals down there. You know, a lot of weather came in. They had to push some things around, move some things around. But, you know, credit to Arizona for going into a hostile environment. You know, Parrish, you and I have both been down to Lafayette over the last couple of years, and it's a good environment down there. Those people love baseball. It's not a huge stadium, but it's a raucous crowd, and they love their Raging Cajuns down there. And that's not an easy place for a visiting team to come in and win. And Arizona came in and not only won, but won two games in one day that they had to. I mean, it was, you know, Louisiana Lafayette was in the driver's seat. You know, they went into that Monday knowing they only needed to win one game, and they were off to Starkville for a super regional, and Arizona had to beat Lafayette twice, and they did that. They won 6-3 and 3-1 to set up, you know, it's actually a rematch from last year. Actually, this will be the third straight year that Mississippi State has played Arizona. 2 years ago, Mississippi State went out to Tucson and played in the High Corbett Classic out there against UC Santa Barbara in Arizona. Mississippi State didn't play too well out there. Only won one game, which was against Arizona, but lost two games to UC Santa Barbara, lost a game to Arizona out there, and then ended up winning their final game against Arizona. Things were a little different last year. Arizona wasn't as good. Mississippi State proved later in the year that it wasn't as good. But last year, Arizona comes to Starkville. Mississippi State takes two games from them. It was only a two-game series. It's one of those kind of round-robin type of weekends that Mississippi State plays early on in the season. And Mississippi State jumped on them pretty good. You know, it really wasn't much of a contest from what I remember about that. I know Austin Sexton pitched one of those games a year ago and had 10 strikeouts in that game. And obviously, he'll get the ball in one of these games this upcoming weekend. That's something we talked to John Cohen about, is what his pitching plans were for this regional. And he's really just not sure just yet, because Zach Houston has pitched so well in his last two starts. Obviously, he pitched incredibly well at Hoover against Alabama, shut them down. And for eight and two-thirds innings, just couldn't get that final out. And you know, ended up giving up a run in that game. Then he comes back last week and just pitched outstanding. Him and Ryan Rigby combined for a two-hit shutout in the championship game of the Starkville Regional against Louisiana Tech. Mississippi State wins that game 4-0. And, you know, Mississippi State set itself up quite nicely from that Starkville Regional. They rolled right through that. It's the first time they've ever swept a regional here at home. They beat Southeast Missouri 9-5. They beat Cal State Fullerton 4-1. And then, like I said, Louisiana Tech 4-0. So they outscored the last two games, you know, 8-1 and in those games. And they pitched outstanding. You know, Austin Sexton pitched well against Cal State Fullerton. I mentioned Zach Houston and Ryan Rigby, you know, two-hit shutout against Louisiana Tech. So things are rolling. The only concern is actually with Mississippi State's biggest ace, and that's Dakota Hudson, a guy that's probably going to go in the first round in tonight's draft. He hasn't pitched well in his last two starts. He's been beat around a little bit, and that's kind of caused some concern for John Cohen, you know, saying that he's not sure exactly who's going to get the starts in the Super Regional. Obviously, you know, Mississippi State only needs to win two games in this regional, so, you know, you want to throw your best guys out there in those first two ball games. But it's really a question mark right now of who Mississippi State's best pitcher is. Obviously, Dakota Hudson's got the stuff and has been their ace all season. But he's been roughed up his last two outings, and Zach Houston has really pitched outstanding his last two outings. And, you know, Austin Sexton's pitched well his last time out. He got roughed up a little bit at the SEC tournament. So, you know, we know Austin Sexton is going to get a start at some point, but we don't know exactly who's going to get the ball in the other one. And then you got a guy that's, you know, Connor Pilkington, who hasn't made a start in the last 2 weeks, and he's itching to get the baseball. So, you know, a lot of options for Mississippi State, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you'd rather have options than not have options at all. But, you know, it's going to be a good weekend, and I think it's for some exciting baseball here in Starkville.
Well, I tell you what, Logan, when you can win the last game of a regional 3-1, as Arizona did, it speaks to the quality of your pitching staff, and it sounds like some good pitching and some good options for Mississippi State right now as well. And You know, it's just going, you know, you don't reach the super regional round and expect a patsy. You don't, you're not going to get to that round and expect an easy path to Omaha, whether you are playing on the road or not. So a challenge for state, and we'll see, you know, if the Bulldogs make it onto Omaha as expected. And expectations for Ole Miss in 2016 were not that high, and the Rebels with 43 wins overachieved. You know, the SEC West coaches or SEC coaches had them picked fifth in the Western Division, and they actually finished fourth, but they were much closer to the top than the bottom of the conference. Now, I say all that to say this: expectations change on the fly. And after this team won 40 games in the regular season, made a deep SEC tournament run to the semifinals with three wins over some really strong RPI opposition, this team was not expected to go two and out in a home regional. It's something the Rebels did for a second time, but they had not lost in a home regional since the very first one that they hosted back in 2004. They have hosted a regional now seven times under Mike Bianco, and they had become quite accustomed to advancing out of those regionals and on to the super regional round. Did not happen this year, as they lost a 6-5 game to Utah, came back the next morning and lost 6-5 to Tulane. You know, I thought Ole Miss would make the plays to win late against Utah, and it looked that way. They kind of edged out in front with a 5-2 lead. Then that bullpen that has been so strong, was so strong for Ole Miss all season, really their calling card, it failed the Rebels in the last four games, not just the regional, but you go back to the semifinal against Texas A&M in the SEC. The Rebels had a three-run lead in the eighth, and we're not able to close that out with Wyatt Short, their stopper, getting the loss there. And even the game before that, when they won in the quarterfinals against Vanderbilt and were able to get the day off on the Friday of Hoover in the SEC tournament, you know, they had a 10-0 lead in that game, and Vanderbilt was able to come back and shave seven runs off that lead. Ole Miss eventually won that game 12-9. Short got the final out, but there were a lot of bullpen arms before him that were pretty ineffective. So that bullpen that was so good all season long and was really what the Rebels could hang their hat on really just came up short in the last four games for Ole Miss. But it wasn't all about the bullpen. You know, they made that deep SEC tournament run because of their hitting. Well, honestly, the way they hit in the regional with the 222 team average was more in line with the way they hit much of the year. Ole Miss hit 314 in the SEC tournament, but that was the aberration. It was a really inconsistent offense this year, and the middle of the lineup that was so good for Ole Miss in Hoover was just 4-for-25. I'm talking about Tate Blackman, J.B. Woodman, and Henry Lartigue. Those 3, 4, and 5 guys, just 4-for-25 in the regional. That's a 160 average if you're scoring at home. And that offensive inconsistency was really more the mark of this team throughout the season. Now, it will be interesting to see what happens with Ole Miss in the draft. They could lose as many as 6 of 8 position players, plus a DH. They know they'll lose Holt Perzok, a senior, who was platooning there at DH. And, you know, they could lose a couple of pitchers. Brady Bramlett has a year left. He could come back or not come back. Then you look at Wyatt Short as a junior. He could get drafted and leave also. Chad Smith is a draft-eligible junior. So, you know, a lot of guys that could be drafted, a couple of seniors in the mix. It could be a really big shakeup for Ole Miss next year in 2017. I don't think all of these draft-eligible guys will end up leaving. My guess is that Colby Bortles, while draft-eligible, will come back. He didn't have a great year offensively, but here's the thing, Logan. You know, the draft is so much more about potential than production. And Bortles has that skill set. Man, you can't teach that size.
Right.
And he's got good glove work for his size, good mobility, and he's a big kid. He could play either corner. He's got some versatility there. you know, somebody could decide to roll the dice with him pretty high in the draft and maybe leave him with a decision to make. But I think that Bortles will be back. He actually sent out a tweet earlier in the week on Tuesday congratulating Woodman on his All-America status. He sent out a tweet that said, "Hey, I really hope we're teammates again next year," which I took that to mean that he hopes that they are teammates again at Ole Miss, which I don't think that will be the case for J.B. Woodman. I don't think he'll be back, but I took that to mean that Colby Bortles is expecting to be back. So we'll see about that. I also think that Tate Blackman, while a sophomore this year, is old enough to be eligible for the draft, and kind of a wait and see for him. Again, I didn't think he had a monster year. He was a much improved offensive player, but he hit about 330. You know, to me, you know, elite college players, Logan, elite college hitters are hitting above the 350 mark. You know, that's where your best hitters are. I mean, 330, hey, that's good. You'd like everybody in your lineup to hit 330, but you know, the best hitters in the game are hitting higher than that at the college level. But here's the other thing about Tate Blackman and any kid that's eligible for the draft. You never know what's going through their head. You know, we see guys all the time leave when we believe they're not ready, and often, you know, our opinions are justified as you track their careers a little bit. Sometimes guys aren't drafted at all, you know, so you just never know. Baseball is such a different animal also because, you know, people look at these players and think, man, you're really not signing. You know, doesn't take much money for you to sign. Well, you know, they're not getting much money with their baseball scholarship, you know, and especially in Mississippi where you don't have those Hope scholarships or those other forms of state financial aid that some states have. You know, and these baseball kids, they're all on partial scholarship. You know, the whole team only gets 11.7 for everybody on the roster. So when you consider it that way, you know, sometimes I guess it makes a little more sense to, you know, go ahead and take the signing bonus, even if it's not as much as you would like, because your baseball scholarship isn't that much. Another thing, Logan, some of these baseball kids, you know, in any sport, sometimes they just think they're supposed to go because of the success they've had at previous levels. Maybe they've got somebody in their ear saying, you know, you're really good and you need to go ahead and get out now. And, you know, and sometimes you get advice like that from different quarters. You just never know what plays into what is really a very important life decision. So a lot of factors there. Ole Miss, a lot of guys eligible and some seniors in the mix. I don't think everybody's going to go. I think they'll have some guys back, and certainly they'll count on some newcomers. With a high school recruiting class right now that is ranked number 5 by Perfect Game, there will be a lot of opportunities for those guys and for other newcomers to contribute next year.
Yeah, and for Mississippi State, it's the same thing. I mean, after not having a single player drafted last year, now granted they had three signees drafted and obviously had more than that drafted, but they had three signees actually signed to play professional baseball that never made it to campus last year. But this year is a totally different story. We already talked about Dakota Hudson earlier in the podcast, but Zach Houston, Reed Humphreys, Vance Tatum, Daniel Brown, Gavin Collins, Austin Sexton, Jacob Robson, Nathaniel Lowe, Jack Kruger, Brent Rooker, all of those guys could hear their name called over the next 3 days. And that's a majority of the production for Mississippi State this season. All of those guys could either be back in, you know, maroon and white next year, or they could be playing professional baseball. And I think you're going to have about half and half. I mean, I think some of them are going to go high enough that they won't be back in Starkville. And I think, you know, some others will be back and playing for the Bulldogs next year. But, you know, another thing that we talked to John Cohen on Wednesday about was the signing class, and he said that they were very concerned about 12 signees that they have. I mean, obviously, that's a lot of guys. He said that's a good and bad. He said, obviously, it's good that you're recruiting the right type of player that many pro teams are interested in them, but it's bad that, you know, your whole recruiting class could be destroyed in that amount of time. Another thing that he talked about, and I agreed with him, is the Major League Baseball draft is in a horrible time for college baseball. He compared it to college basketball and college football. It would be like if the NCAA tournament in basketball is if the NBA draft was held in the second round of the tournament. It is like Mike Krzyzewski wouldn't go for that. It would be like if the NFL draft was held during the week of the SEC championship. Nick Saban's not going to go for that. He said, but baseball coaches, we just kind of have to deal with it. And he said, you know, these players like from Mississippi State right now, we talked to Dakota Hudson and Austin Sexton on Thursday, and those guys are trying to prep for Arizona this weekend and a huge weekend for a chance to go to Omaha next week. And they're also having to prepare for, you know, getting that phone call that, hey, you're drafted. And a guy like Dakota Hudson, hey, you know, we're offering you, you know, X amount of millions of dollars to come play, you know, and you're obviously excited about that, but you've got to turn around and focus on the Arizona Wildcats this weekend as well. And, you know, he said that he's seen different players go through it different ways in the past. You know, obviously 3 years ago, Hunter Renfro goes in the first round. And he said it was just such a huge relief to have that off of his shoulders. And then Adam Frazier gets drafted a little bit later on. I think he was a 6th round pick. And he goes 6 for 6 on the day that he was drafted. So, you know, different guys handle it different ways. But, you know, it's obviously a distraction from the task at hand this weekend. And, you know, and you would like to see maybe the Major League Draft, you know, happen after the College World Series. It would be, you know, another 3 weeks. But, you know, at the end of the day, what's another 3 weeks? You know, it's another 3 weeks that these players could be scouted at the same time, too. So, yeah, you know, I agreed with him. It would be at a horrible time, and I think he has an argument there.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check us out with The Memo, our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and Prep Rally for all things high school sports in Northeast Mississippi every Wednesday with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. And Logan Lowry and I, Parrish Alford, will be back with you next week with another edition of Double Coverage.